Morning. I've exhausted all my jokes this morning. No, there isn't a twist. No, 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 that's all, that's all, that's all, that's all. I could tell you the story about my aunt fam. There's one aunt in that aunt fam that I have that dresses up like a clown from time to time. He's what I call an anti-depress aunt. But anyway, this morning, I'm going to do something different this morning because God's told me to talk to you about this one phrase that he's just been bombarding me about. It might just be for me, but I think it's for you guys as well. Of the fact that I choose you. Doesn't matter where you are, what you've done, what your current life situation is, what your past was, what your future's looking like. God says to you this morning, I choose you. And for me to sort of show that, I've had to look at, I'm going to use Peter as an example, because he has a lot of examples in his life that we can relate to. So I'm going to start with this. There's a lot of readings, because there's little chunks from Peter's life. And hopefully I can show in this how Jesus is with Peter, and how that same, he's the same with us. When he says to Peter, I choose you, he says the same to us. So, first reading is from Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11. Oh, I've got the thing here. I'm going to switch it on. There we go. I don't know if you can read that, but I'll read it anyway. Is it coming on the screen? Can you read that? Is that big enough? This is where Jesus calls Simon, who becomes Peter, James and John. While Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, that is an alternate name for the Sea of Galilee. And when I show you a map a little bit later, you'll also see it was also called Lake Tiberias. It's not actually a sea, it is actually a lake, by the way. When Jesus was standing by the lake, many people pushed to get near him. They wanted to hear the word of God. Jesus saw two boats on the shore. The fishermen were not there because they were washing their nets, which they had to do after they'd done the night's fishing. They had to wash the nets, let them dry before they went out the following night. Jesus got into a boat which belonged to Simon. Jesus had asked him to push it out a little way from the land. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, push out into deep water, let down your nets for some fish. Simon said to him, Teacher, we have worked all night. Generally, in this part of the world, fishing was done at night because a lot more fish were caught in the dark than what it was during the day in the heat. For any of you that fish locally, you'll know that you go first thing in the morning and last thing at night. That's the best time to catch fish. But because you told me, we have worked all night and we have caught nothing, but because you told me to, I will let the net down. When they had done this, they caught so many fish, their net started to break. They called to their friends working in the other boats to come and help them. They came, and both boats were so full of fish, they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he got down at the feet of Jesus. He said, Go away from me, Lord, because I'm a sinful man. He and all those with him were surprised and wondered about the many fish. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were surprised also. They were working together with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, Do not be afraid. From now on, you will fish for men. When they came to the land with their boats, they left everything and followed Jesus. So as I said, I've got a map. We have a map of the Sea of Galilee. As I said, this says Tiberias. There's that other place I couldn't pronounce very well. So that's the Sea of Galilee. It's his lake. And if we look back at the earlier chapter, Jesus was coming from Capernaum round to speak to people there. Although you can't see it on this map, certain aspects of the geography in this area led itself to being a natural amphitheatre, where when Jesus commandeers Simon's boat and drifts out a little bit so he can talk to people, his voice can be heard quite clearly, even though he's away from the shore. Quite clearly back on dry land, they could hear him very well. Don't have to take my word for it. Tests have been done. And it's not a surprise that Jesus takes advantage of his father's handiwork and uses that to his benefit when he's trying to teach the people at that time. After Jesus finishes his teaching, he says to Peter, "Put into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon tells Jesus that they'd already put in a shift and they caught nothing. The next thing I think that Simon says is quite extraordinary. Maybe not to others, but to me it was. Simon says this, "Because you say so, I will let down the nets." Really? Because you say so? We don't really know, we can't really judge at this part in the passage of what sort of relationship Simon had with Jesus at this time. We know that he was introduced to Jesus by his brother in some of the early chapters of John, but he still went back to fishing, so nothing major probably happened at that point. In the previous chapter to this, Luke 4, at the end of that, we're told that Jesus healed Simon's mother-in-law. And maybe while he was tending his nets, he may have heard some of Jesus' teaching. But something brings him to the point where he can say, "Because you say so, we will do it." I think that's an interesting thing, because sometimes as Christians and as a church, because Jesus says so, we sometimes don't do it. Here, Simon's saying, "Because you say so, I'll put aside my past experiences. I'll put aside my personal pride. I'll put aside my tiredness." Remember, he's been on the boats all night. And he says, "Because you say so, I will obey." You know, as I say, not just as individuals, but as churches, you know, we're familiar with the phrases, "We've never done that before. We always do it this way. We tried that once and it didn't work." But the bottom line is, because Jesus says so, we need to do it. I don't know if you can read this too well. For most commentaries that I read about this passage, it focused really heavily on the miracle of the catch of fish. Quite rightly so, you know. Catch nothing, go back out. Jesus tells you where to find them and you catch a fish and bring it back and you nearly sink two boats. That's brilliant. But for me, there's something in this interaction between Simon and Jesus that just blows me away a little bit. When Simon Peter saw what had happened, he got down at the feet of Jesus and said, "Go away from me, Lord, because I'm a sinful man." Simon disqualifies himself from being anywhere near Jesus because he considers himself a sinful man. And let's be honest, I think we can all relate to that. That we push Jesus away sometimes in our life because, oh, you won't believe what I've just done. You know, I remember in the past when I've been challenged, I think I've used this quote before, Sharon Hutton, Sharon Evans, as was then, in Diane's house, used to say, "David, how are you getting on with God? How are you getting on with Jesus?" And I used to come up with that old classic, "Well, that's between me and God." I'm not sure I would have worked too well. It would have worked too well for me being in one of Wesley's accountability groups. "Yeah, that's between me and God, what I did this week. Thank you very much." But Simon's acknowledgement that he was a sinful man, I think it's one of the toughest things to overcome in ourselves. You know, that knowledge that we're sinful and that our past has a tendency to keep on replaying in our heads. I know people think that our sinful nature can be pointed at by other people and be judged by other people. But I think the biggest judgment in our lives, the biggest condemnation about us being sinful, comes from here, from our own heart. Regardless of your walk with Jesus, I think our heart condemns us harder than anything or anyone. As I was looking into this, I found a verse which I hope gives you the comfort that it gives me. It's from 1 John chapter 3, verse 30. I've got it from three different translations here. The first one's the NLT, which we generally use in the church. The second one's the NIV. And the third one is the Message. And I'll read all three of them. NLT. Even if we feel guilty, God is greater than our feelings. And he knows everything. From the NIV, if our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our heart and knows all things. And just to show that we got some street cred from the Message, it's the way to shut down debilitating self-criticism, even when we know there is something to it. For God is greater than our worried hearts and knows more about us than we do ourselves. And I think that puts into context a little bit of what happens next. Going back to this exchange between Simon Peter and Jesus. And I think this is the best part of this story for me. The response to Simon's self-disqualification, shall I say. Jesus, with no judgment, no argument, says, do not be afraid. From now on, you will fish for men with me. Saying to Simon, I choose you to become a fisher of men. I choose you. You may think you're disqualified. You may think you're a sinful man. That was worthy of that kind of fanfare. Saying to Simon, I choose you to come and fish for men with me. And although it doesn't say it in this passage here, if you look at some of the calling, the early chapters of Matthew and Mark, when Jesus calls the disciples, it uses the phrase, without so much of a question, they laid down their boats and followed Jesus. I'm tempted to finish by saying, why? Because he said so. From here, Peter's story is quite full on. You know, he's a bit of a gung-ho disciple. You know, confident, bold. He put his mouth into gear before he engaged his brain. You know. You know those sorts of people, don't you? He wanted to be the greatest disciple. He wanted to show Jesus and everybody else that he was the guy Jesus could depend on. He made a lot of promises. He even told Jesus he was the man and he could rely on his sword, his energy, his dedication, even to the point of death. He said to Jesus, I don't know about the rest of these guys here, Jesus. They might bail on you, but I never will. Ever done that? Jesus, this time I promise and I won't mess up. I think we've all been there. Strangely, the interesting thing here when Peter actually makes this promise, which he does in Luke 22, which is this next bit, which I think is interesting. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift each of you like wheat, but I have pleaded in prayer. Wow. He pleaded in prayer for Simon that his faith did not fail. Peter says, Lord, I am ready to go to prison with you, even to die with you. But Jesus said to Peter, let me tell you something. No, you're not. You will deny three times that you ever knew me. The rest of the passage goes on to say that they arrested Jesus and led him to the high priest's home. Peter followed at a distance. The guards lit a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat around it. A A servant girl noticed him by the firelight and began staring at him, finally saying, "This man is one of Jesus' followers." But Peter denied it. "Woman," he said, "I don't even know him." After a while, someone else looked at him and said, "You must be one of them." "No, man, I'm not," Peter retorted. After about another, someone else insisted, "This must be one of them, because he is a Galilean too." "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." And immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. At that moment, the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and in Peter's mind, the Lord's words flashed through his head. "Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny me three times that you even know me." And Peter left the courtyard, weeping bitterly. Peter's life unfolded exactly how Jesus predicted it was. We all know what it feels like to let Jesus down, and we can relate to Peter here. He made, as we have made, some bold promises to Jesus in the past, and we've broken them. There are times in our lives where we've all heard the rooster, and then the realization kicks in. Jesus wasn't trying to sort of shoot down Peter in flames, but he was trying to make Peter understand that he knows that at times, and come and talk to me after if you disagree with what I'm about to say, that Jesus knows that he can't always count on us. But the good news is, we can always count on him. Jesus is saying at times, "You're not dependable. But I am. You're not going to come through this, but I will with you. At times you're going to fail me, but I won't fail you." And saving the world doesn't rest on your shoulders, it rests on me. The final verse in this passage says, "Peter left the courtyard weeping bitterly." But Jesus understood. And even so, he still chose Peter. He worked with him. He talked to him. On this rock, my church will be built. My wife will testify to the fact that my car radio is all set at the 80 station. 80 stations. Absolute, Heart, they're all 80s. A song came up the other day. We've all been in this situation where we felt we've let Jesus down, and we may not run out to the courtyard weeping bitterly, but we know we haven't done what we should have done. And I think what we do is that our natural response is to run and distance ourselves. But Jesus doesn't want that. The song that came on the radio, I'm not going to tell you what the title of the song was, but the chorus line said this: "Stay in my arms if you dare. Must I imagine you there?" Jesus doesn't want us to leave his embrace. Doesn't matter how much we mess up. "Stay in my arms if we dare." And that's the problem. We don't dare. And Rhea might relate to this. And then what we do when we're in his arms and we make this error is that we turn into toddlers. The toddlers have this unique knack of becoming boneless. So when you try and pick them up and hug them and stuff, and they don't want to be hugged, they just go blubble. Yeah? Am I right? You know, some of us may only remember that from memory. Yeah, remember from memory, that makes sense. But, you know, have a memory on that. Rhianne probably has it all the time at the moment, and other people younger. But that's what we do. Jesus says, "Stay in my arms if you dare." And we go, "No, I can't." And we go all boneless. And we run out of the courtyard, weeping bitterly. Like Peter, Jesus will definitely trust us to do big things. As I said, this is the rock on which I'll build my church. As I announced earlier on, God's given us a new kitchen. God has given us a new boiler. God has given us access to various things that we're going to look to build on. But as a church, we need to understand that it's Jesus that is the cornerstone of everything we do. And we need to depend on him. It's not about us. It's about the glory of God. That's why we've got the kitchen. That's why we're having a new boiler. It's about God's glory. And even in all those times that we fail, Jesus still says, I choose you. I want to finish the last bit of what I'm talking about this morning, moving to chapter 21, where Jesus appears to the disciples. Again, by the side of the Sea of Galilee. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon, Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Obviously, they were really important. They didn't get a mention. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. Oh, we'll come too. They all said, so they all went out in the boat. But they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach and the disciples could see who he was. He called out, I've got to be honest with you, I can't imagine Jesus shouting out fellows. It just doesn't...
It's not Aramaic.
Exactly. He would say, hey guys.
Hi chaps.
Have you got any lemonade on that or ginger ale? Have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw your net out on the right-hand side of the boat and you'll get some. So they did. And they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic because he's stripped for work, jumped into the water and headed to the shore. The others stayed on the boat and pulled the loaded net into the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from the shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire with some bread. Bring some fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. God, he's a strong guy, isn't he? Goodness sake. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net had not torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. So as I said, we're back at the Sea of Galilee, where three or more years earlier, Jesus had first been called by Simon, first called Simon. His disciples are on the beach, on the boat, and Jesus is on the beach. They had again been fishing and had nothing to show for their efforts. Jesus seems to have an issue, I'm getting a feeling here, for empty nets. He's got a big problem with empty nets. He tells them to try the other side of the boat again. And I think this is an interesting verse. And it's a verse I'd like us to think about from this passage. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. Why is that important? If we just think about what we've just spoke about and Peter running from the courtyard weeping bitterly, what this is Peter going back to what he was comfortable with. Back to the only job he had known, catching fish. Like Peter did here, we too have moments. The enemy blasts us and reminds us of our failings, where we fall flat. And what Peter is saying here by going fishing, I'm finished with this. I had a chance following Jesus and blew it. I think it was the denying him three times that pushed him over the edge. But we do the same. Whenever we fall down, it lessens our confidence in God, and then the enemy strikes. The enemy will be saying things like, you've let God and yourself down. Don't bother going back to God. I wouldn't even bother praying. How many times have you let him down? I'm sure God's fed up with you. He won't listen. What's the tally now? I think we've all believed some of those lies at some point. And then the next thing we know, we're back to where we started. We convince ourselves that we have no options. I'll just have a drink. I mean, I can't turn to God. What else do I have? I know this relationship is harmful to me, but God doesn't love me. God's tired of hearing my excuses now. My poor self-image thoughts, like I always do. But what Jesus did by turning up on the beach of the shores of Galilee that morning was saying, Peter, I choose you. The disciples had been fishing all night. They had all gone back to what was comfortable for them. And after a long night of doing what they were comfortable with doing, what did they have to show for it? Nothing. As they come in, Jesus asked them, Fellows, did you have any fish? I am told the translation of this misses the impact of what Jesus was trying to say here. I've been told it sort of equates to, how's that working for you? How's that working for you? Jesus knew the answer to the question. Jesus knew they were returning to their old ways that would be fruitless. How's that working for you? Maybe we've been back fishing for a long time, or we might be a weekend fisherman, and I've had whole nights of nothing to show for it. Jesus says to you this morning, I know where the fish are, like he said to the guys on the boat, meaning I know exactly what you're looking for, and I know where you can get it. How is it going for you? Jesus says, if you're looking for friendship, acceptance, meaning, healing, significance, security, I know where it is. And like Peter, Jesus is still choosing us after all this, after all of us going off fishing, going off doing our own thing, still choosing us. Today wasn't really about Peter. It's about us. We've all been in these similar same kind of scenarios that Peter's been in, that we've read through today. You know, that sort of our heart condemning ourselves and not feeling particularly chuffed with ourselves. You know, letting God down and crying and running out of the courtyard and going back to do our old stuff. But what I wanted to say this morning, it is about us, and Jesus is saying, I choose you. We're going to become fishers of men, and I choose you to fish with me. Peter was a sinful man. You know, he let God down at times. He reversed back to what was comfortable. Jesus was on the beach to remind Peter there was still work to do, and that he was choosing him to help him do it. Jesus is saying, put your nets over here. I know exactly what you're looking for. Do you know what today is? I know it's a Sunday, and I know it's the 30th of July, but you know what today is?
Ricky's birthday.
No, it's not Ricky's birthday. Today is God's favorite day. Why? Because it's today. And he's choosing you. You have a choice today. You have a choice to choose him and get alongside. Jesus is showing us this morning, you're not too disqualified, you're not too this, you're not too that, the other. He chooses you. Can we sing that once? All I Once Held Dear again. As we finish, please. We will finish with that song, because I think that's important. You know, that fact that Peter went back to what was comfortable. All I once held dear.